Hey guys, this is Valle from Moji here. Danish Counter-Strike is one hell of a drug, but so is Thorin's YouTube channel.
Right, I'm here for another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Executor, who is a super old school, iconic Counter-Strike pro from the 1.6 days. In fact, it's funny, Executor, they called the game 1.6, because obviously the joke is, like, you were there from the betas, you were there from the very beginning of the whole game. In fact, one thing I wanted to ask you about initially was, since I've known you over the years from the events, all different teams a little bit more, I actually know that before you were into Counter-Strike, you were always someone who was a gamer, right? You were always playing. But I remember for you, it was like strategy games, right? It wasn't just like, you weren't just like the guy playing Quake. You were the one playing like Civilization or these games, right?
Yeah, it's funny. And my background is from all sorts of games, from the early days of Sega and Nintendo and those platforms. But when PC came out, I actually started playing like these 2D RTS games like Civilization, and even older games that I can't even remember the names of right now. But when we started, you know, the computers back then was called like, I don't know the English, 386?
Yeah, the Spectrum.
The Spectrum.
Oh, you mean like the early PC ones? Yeah, the chip was called the 386, the IBM and that, yeah.
They didn't have graphics, and yes. They didn't have any power to have like complex games, you know. So strategy games were often like easy to play and make, I guess.
Sure.
So I started with that, and then so my gaming background was not FPS before, like way out, like late 90s, which is now over 20 years
ago. Sure. Because here's the thing, Executor, the thing that people might be surprised by, that is, even though it's not at all like that, I know people who aren't fans of FPS games think that Counter-Strike is just like whoever has the best aim wins or something, whereas obviously you know this, like, it is Counter-Strike is a game about the mind and about how you use your teammates, and obviously there's loads of tactical depth to it, you know. So is this one of the reasons why Counter-Strike appealed to you?
To be honest, it was very random. The Counter-Strike was like the game that I started playing so much. But after I started playing it, it became clear that strategy is very important in any team game, right? So even if you have a bad computer or bad internet, which I had both of, I could still play the game at a certain level, because it required you to communicate well and to play with others in certain ways that just gave you an advantage. But I think FPS games, it's a lot about the gear, and that you have to have a certain amount of frames per second and a monitor that can do, you know, esport refresh rate. But back in the days, we were all on shitty hardware. You couldn't get anything better. So playing 100 frames in Counter-Strike, I didn't do that before, like way back, like 2-3 years into my professional career almost. You know that I was sitting in Norway playing with these Danish teams and Swedish teams, and I could play with a phone connection.
Yeah, this is something I want to ask you about, dude, because what's funny is, you know, a lot of players who were even good players in Counter-Strike, their problem is it always starts that everyone calls them an onliner, and then they have to prove it online. The joke is you were the opposite, because back in the day, like you're talking about, when all the Swedes and other people from like whatever, Denmark, Norway, when they have like the DSL connection, you had like ISDN, which meant already you could have like three times their ping. And on top of that, like, you just proved yourself as a LAN player. You shot the first LANs, right? Like, how did you get into these teams? Because everyone else, like I said, it was just good online to start with, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't actually know. I didn't have a, like, you know, set plan. Okay, I'm going to do this and that. I'm going to prove myself in these online competitions, and then I'll be picked up by a big team. Because now it's much more organized like that, I guess.
Sure.
And I guess even more difficult for new players to like break into the top teams. Back then, it was kind of not set. I mean, before the first ever CPL in Europe, in Cologne, I had quite a good internet name, but I had never been to there had been no competition in Counter-Strike,
right?
Basically. So what I did was just like being very ruthless about the clan-based ladder and picking start joining the best team in Norway, and then we lost to the best team in Finland, and then I joined the best team in Denmark, and then, you know, that's how I just like...
you just hopped around until you got to the top.
I just jumped right. When I saw that the potential was limited in the team that I was currently in, but there was no other way, and I was very young, and I didn't really care about, you know, I didn't have a loyalty to the people that I was playing with back then, because I didn't actually really know them, you know, just it was just casually be played, picked up on a public server, and then I was doing a lot of fragging, and then I got asked to join a team. So it was just like a very random chance, but I made a lot of effort to get to the first ever CPL in Europe, which luckily was with a very good team as well in Spirit of Amiga back then. Yeah. And you couldn't really know that, but Clanbase was actually a good measurement of you knew, like, maybe there was one or two teams in Sweden that were at the level. We were the best team in Denmark back then. And so when we went into the event, we had pretty high expectations, but we had like almost never scrimmed against German teams or French teams, or even Finnish teams were rarely scrimmed against, because I think there were some ping issues there. But then I played second there with the team, and I got to know Potti and Heaton, and you know, the rest is history. That was just like the catalyst for everything. Get to know those guys.
By the way, one thing I want to know about is you say there that like you were hopping around. So what people might not know is that that also is the opposite to a lot of people's early mentality. Like if I talk to a lot of the other people, dude, they're just going to tell me like, look, I was just good at Counter-Strike. It was a game I enjoyed. And then usually most teams, I always tell people, but they're not teams like in the modern sense. In fact, calling them clans was a good name. Teams used to have like 15 people, and it was like whoever was online played the game, you know. And so actually it was more like friends back then as groups, you know. So actually in a way, to me, you were one of the early people. Funny enough, like Heaton and Potti, where you actually sort of did almost understand it could be like a pro endeavor though, by being more like a pro athlete would, like, you know, you like if your team's failing, you move to the one that's going to be better, or if you see an upcoming guy, you partner with him, right? That's how you win.
Yeah, I mean, I was very competitive back then as well, so I even just by playing public service, I always wanted to be, you know, be the top on the leaderboard and whatnot. I was paying attention to how you had like this world rankings Just to sum it up, it's just like my individual goals were to be the best as I could and top that. And then I met people that had the same ambitions about becoming the best. And back then we had good practice routines comparable to like, you know, our generation. So we were like ahead in many aspects when coming to thinking about the game, more than just running around and trying to kill people and planting the bomb. It was just a lot more structured around it, and that gave us an advantage, I guess, back then.
Let me ask you about some of these players then. So as you say, one of the first names is obviously Potti, and if people don't know, he's one of those players where he was also just at the very beginning of Counter-Strike, and everyone I've ever talked to always says that it's just a player where he was just good from the beginning. He was just, it's basically immediately good. You could just tell like this guy. And also he was a bit older than everyone else, right? So he had like sort of a unique quality to him, right?
Yeah, I guess he was like a year or two older than me. Yeah, it's crazy to think about now, but he was just the guy that, like, you could immediately tell was like worlds apart from like any other player that I had met. Even in that tournament, they played with a stand. You know, they had some problems with their lineup, so they only placed fourth or something. But I remember watching him play, and he was just like crazy good at that LAN in that first CPL. So I knew that I wanted to play with him. He wasn't even in that tournament because he came.
He's still a kid, if people don't know. This is when he was like something like 16 or something, right? Like he was very young when you met him, right?
Yeah, I remember he had a different nickname back then as well. And then he had to change because I think it was like Kill for Fun or something.
Right.
Sponsored.
Yeah, sure.
So all of a sudden he was Heaton. But yeah, that's another story. He wasn't in the picture. But Potti was, and him I met there. I'm not sure about Medion was there. I think he was the one missing, maybe. Anyways, Yeah, Poli was like the first superstar in Counter-Strike, I would say. He was the one that drove, that was the captain in the team. He was doing all the tactics. He was like very strict on how we were going to practice as a team. And he was very dedicated. And I owe him a lot about like the early days of my own career, like how to make a winning team, because that's a recipe that you could use in.
Can you give like, obviously, you can just give us like some general principles. What do you think you have to do? Because I will say that's one thing I always admired a lot about that combo of Heaton and Potty, is even though a lot of other people did think they were a bit ruthless with like some of the kicks, they made so many right choices though. You know, think how many times they went to the top. It was ruthless, but they got the success from it.
Yeah, I think they were leading by example. Those guys were playing crazy amounts of Counter-Strike. That was like one of the reasons why I didn't want to play with them after
a while. Oh, right. They just wanted you to practice too much.
They just never stopped
right.
playing.
Yes.
And so that didn't it doesn't surprise me that they kept going for so long, because right. they just had this inner motivation of playing Counter-Strike. And I'm thinking it was fun to play 24/7. So When I was playing with them, it was just like we practiced, we went through the tactics 1 hour before every day. I remember in the early days we were like, okay, this week we're gonna practice nuke, and it's not like it's Counter-Strike Global Offensive now, right? With like all of these complex systems, it was just like, okay, we're gonna run 3A outside and 2 inside. Right. That was like the main strategy on you. Right. And then we could do that in a practice. We could literally do that for six times a day, doing the same 2-3 basic strategies over and over and over again. And for a week. And then next week we did an IMLA. And that's how they all started. But yeah, I'm not saying Counter-Strike these days are more complex, but I think the depth level at that time was just, it was so new that it was enough to be the best.
Well, especially because the other thing is executing, you know this, back then in the very, very early days of the game, like, look, people can think whatever they like about Valve, but I always thought a lot of the patches actually made the game a little bit more sort of casual friendly and took some of the skill away. And so actually the era we're talking about, this is like the beginning of like retail Counter-Strike, basically. This is when the game also had a lot of skill in it though, right? So the thing with teams like yours, for example, in this case is when you've got that many amazing players, like every name you just mentioned, in fact, like people might not know Hib, for example. He was probably the best AWPer in the world. He was fucking unbelievable. Like you just had... This was like a superstar, like an all-star team of players, right? So if you have a team like that, you're also not going to run all the most complicated tactics, right? You're going to sort of let people figure out individually what you could do. Like that team could just destroy everyone, right?
Yep, we did. We won like 3 CPL Europes in a row, and sadly we didn't get to the Americas. But we were just, there was no competition. I remember in a CPL final, it was so easy that I was running around with the Pava.
Okay.
I was serious, but I wasn't that serious because I knew we were.
That's pretty swaggy, like in a final, sure.
Yep. So I remember that, but we were just a lot better than the competition back then. Even when we split up and we made 2 teams, we were the top 2 teams in the next CPL.
Yes, exactly. Yes. No, that's the joke. I even thought back then it must have just been obvious to you guys. Like, actually, we should just get back together. Like, come on, it's just us again in the final.
Exactly.
Yeah. By the way, along those lines, actually, a question I would have for you is, this is one that only old school people can talk about, is obviously back then in Europe, if you remember, we also did the charges only rule set. We weren't doing like max rounds like now. And I know, look, later on, max rounds had its own different appeal. But I actually always thought, like, sadly, we can't go back in time and do this. I always wondered, what if charges only had stayed? Because if people don't know, especially if you like tactical play, it allowed a lot of space for that. I always thought it was genius because, like, as the IGL on the T side, it's like you sort of manage the clock. It's a bit like American football, if people don't know, you're sort of like figuring out, like, right, I'm behind, let's say randomly, like 6 rounds, right? Well, now I know I have to like do a lot of fast strats, don't I? I've got to get a lot of hits in. Whereas if I'm more behind 1 round, maybe it's about like just get like the perfect strat. It was actually quite a cool sort of I thought for someone like you especially, it would have been awesome if that had stayed, right?
Yeah, the concept of charges only is good in theory. What was the problem was that you could abuse it pretty much.
Yes, that's true. The CTs could do the stupid stuff like save out and stuff. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
It became quite boring when teams figured that out. But
right.
The concept that the attacking team can only score the points should make it for a more fast-paced game. Because if you, as an attacking team, can play 20 rounds instead of 10 rounds,
yes.
then you have a double amount of rounds that you
exactly.
can win.
Yes.
So in theory, it's good, but sadly, I mean, there was a lot of, like, you know, Counter-Strike back then, as you said, there were a lot of iterations about it, and the money bug was, like, I mean, for several years.
Yeah, that's true.
People didn't know about the money system, and which was, like, a huge thing. I think charges only is a as a concept could have worked, but I think when you got used to the max round system, it is the most fair, balanced way of playing it, because then you have a set amount, and then you know,
okay,
you know you can't abuse the timer as we did as many teams did when they were teased and just camping out. Because yes. that was directly related to the money bug system. Because
yes.
If the CTs didn't kill you, they would get less money than you. It was just
the hilarious thing, by the way, Execute. I'm saying this for the fans listening, obviously, is when Executor says this money bug, like this key aspect existed for years. It's actually like tiny bit. I'll use the modern word cringe that all the Zoomers use, because if they don't know, if they were an old school fan, that's right. Your favorite American team didn't know about this, and all these CPLs, like, they were having to just lose rounds and not know what was happening. They were like, "What the hell? Why?" They just didn't get it, did they? Like, what are they doing? And like all the top Nordic teams basically knew about this and just abused it constantly. Of course.
Exactly.
Yes.
they didn't hate for a lot of fun.
No, that's true. It made it boring, of course, yes.
When we were having five TVs with Glocks
yes.
on train, camping the, you know.
That was the classic one. Yes.
That was the classic one.
After the pistol round, exactly, where you just sit there and you just wait them out and see if they come. And the joke is sometimes they come and you kill them as well, you know, like.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Like, win-win. And it was like, I think the round times were long.
Back it was like 3 minutes or something back then, yeah. Dude. It was crazy, yeah.
You could have gone on.
It was ridiculous,
that.
Yeah. By the way, you said it there, but obviously the weird thing in history, I always think it must suck for you, because since you actually are in history so associated with NIP, and then you were actually in SK afterwards with Heat and Potty, everyone must always come up and go like, oh, and then remember when you won that CPL over Xtreme? You were like, bro, that's the one I wasn't in on that land. Because that was the one where, obviously, you had to fall out with them, right? So what I wanted to ask was this. I've noticed in your career, there is a pattern, which is when we said you had the bad internet earlier on, and you said it yourself, you weren't the guy who wanted to practice as much as Heaton and Potty. I've noticed in your career, it seems like you did have these times where, like, maybe your motivation, I don't know, comes in waves or around when the tournaments are. Because it seems like every time, back then there would be a big gap, obviously, between big CPLs, like the major ones. And I noticed you nearly always had some drama, or you're in and out of a team, or you stopped playing for a month or something. Like, what was going on in that sense? Why was there always a little bit of drama around Executor back in the day?
Because I'm a drama boy. No, I was just used to not be just to have the freedom. When I was like, why I started playing computer games was that then I had the freedom to do whatever what I wanted to do when I was in front of the computer and when I was
right.
In front of the computer. So basically, what happened was that I knew that we were going to have a tournament in Dallas in July, I guess. And then you prepare for that. And then the next big event would be in the winter one, right? And then maybe you had a CPL or two or a qualifier that you had to go to.
Yes.
But for me, it was just like, okay, if I practice with my team for 2-3 weeks, maybe a month, and then a week boot camp at LAMP, then I would be good to go. That worked for me. But that's a funny thing. That the reason why I got kicked out of NIC the first time was because I was just not online for like 2 months.
They just never saw you on the internet.
They didn't see me because I
okay.
Didn't
that's a pretty fair reason to kick you, to be fair. Like.
Yeah. So I remember we had this IRC, you know, the chatting program, and then we had this clan channel where you know all the fans were, and I was never there, and I was barely in our own private channel, like just saying okay, popping in, saying hello, and then I was offline for days. And so all of a sudden I just realized that okay, so they found a replacement for me, so then I had to go and sign for another team. But yeah, it was just my own, like, I guess I didn't have that drive to
right
to play the game. And to be fair, I mean, it wasn't that fun for me with my internet. And
yeah, that's understandable, sure.
Computer that wasn't good at all. I mean, I got destroyed online, and I knew that the moment that I came to a tournament, I would destroy them. But then I had to practice and being really bad. So kind of killed my motivation, I guess. But it's no excuse. I could have moved to Sweden. I could have bought a better computer. I could have had a better internet, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't think about it to be in those terms back then.
I did, like, maybe a month or two ago, an interview with Notorious, the Swedish player, who obviously you played with. And what's funny is when you played in this team, the Game Online team with him, he actually said something that I thought was quite funny. I thought you'd enjoy, which is because we were talking about how different it was back in the day, like with the fact that, like, there wasn't many tournaments. And I was talking about this fact that, like, back then, the craziest thing obviously was when everyone had already played on the internet, you'd get to LAN and you'd be like, holy shit, like half of these guys aren't even good. Like what? And he said literally when he came to this team with you, and he didn't even know you that well, because obviously you just joined. He said when he came to this LAN, he just realized, like, wait a minute, it's basically like me and Executor, just like versus the world. Like the rest of them are okay, but like we're just gonna have to carry the whole thing. And he said you were like a LAN monster back then.
Yeah, I mean, he's right in the fact that we were playing with three guys that were playing from an internet cafe in Göteborg, I guess.
Yes.
At least two of them were. And they were, like, in practices when we were playing online, they were, like, crazy good, right?
Right.
And me and Notorious, we were playing from home, and I guess he had some of the same problems that I did, bad internet, bad computer, whatever. So we were just, like, doing our job, but we were never, like, excelling. And then the moment we came to the CPL, I mean, I think that was in winter CPL.
Yeah.
One or two or something. We just realized that we – and you see – you see your teammates playing, right? Live.
Yes.
For the first time. And so he's right. That was the impression I had. I mean, I left the team immediately after that tournament. And that was a lot because of that experience where I was just like, these guys aren't that good. So it was quite apparent. But I mean, you can have that, but it's people that can be good both online and online, like Potty and Heatenwork, for instance. Then sure. It wasn't good enough for them to, like, know that you have me, for instance, that could be good, but because they needed that confirmation every day, you know,
in right. practice,
being That's online, right. being around the team. So that was a problem. But yeah, it's quite accurate what he said. And he was crazy good at that LAN too. He surprised me because I only knew him from the practices that we had online.
Right.
Even if I weren't that good, he wasn't that good either. But at that LAN, he was crazy good. And he proved himself also later, I guess. So
yes,
he was a very talented player, and he's a very cool guy to be around as well. So yeah, it's all good. Did we play again in Team 9?
Yeah, because you were in Adrenaline together, yes.
Yeah.
He came later when you did the one where you went to the US, et cetera. That one, if you remember. Right, well, here's another thing I want to ask about. There's a little period that people will forget about here, because if you just go by the big CPLs, it's going to go like NIP to SK. But there was the period in between where when Veszlin went and made that Nordic division team, this is actually where you first played with Dark, if you remember, because you stood in for them at like an ESL, like, I don't know what, CPL Cologne. It was like one of those type events. I think it was Cologne. Let me think. Yes, it was. It was like just the next year's Cologne. It was the one where you stood in and you won the LAN. But then the joke is you just took Dark and went to SK right afterwards. So like my question would be, was it a similar scenario there? Was it like you won and you were like, actually this guy, like Dark, like me and you should just go to the other team. We're the best players in the team. Was it something like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's so long ago. To be honest, it was very like simple back then. It was just like, first of all, the only reason why I went with Nordic Division was because I was playing with NIP back then, and we were boot camping in Stockholm, and we were planning to go to that event, but there was some 18-year-old rule or something that made us that, and we had some players that weren't 18.
Ah, right.
So I was just like, okay, I want to go. So, and then Veszlin was also Stockholm based, right? And I just,
yes.
And we were like hanging out sometimes, and I told him, okay, I can be a stand-in. So we went to that tournament with no practice. I think I maybe practiced like a couple of times with them before that event. And we were six people actually rotating to play.
Yes.
I played all the maps, of course, but we had one more guy with us. And then we won that event, and it was very, I mean, since Nick didn't go and those players weren't going, it was just like even bigger difference in skill,
right?
Back then, and so I was pretty good back then, and I got to play with Dark, and I just saw that he had a lot of potential, and I told that to Potty and Hitman, and then we got an offer from SK because the NIP thing, we got there was some sponsorship issues,
right?
Yeah, manager,
exactly.
Like,
yes,
serious and blah blah blah. So, and SK was a very serious.
Yeah, they were legit. Yeah, they're one of the like real teams, essentially. Yeah, exactly. Say, like, what about this then? So, one thing I would ask is, what would you tell me about Dark? Like, he's obviously a fellow Norwegian player. Like, this is a guy. The funny thing is, I actually knew him from Quake before this. He used to be like a top Quake player, if people don't know, in like team deathmatch and stuff. So, like in early Counter Strike, like he was also a very skilled player, right? I mean, this team he went through with X is the reason you won. He was a good player, right?
I think as a gamer, I mean, if I want to classify Dark, is like he had a gaming talent. Like in FPS games, there were twice my potential as like pure aim and
right.
mechanics, blah, etc. Because he had, as you said, he came from Quake. For me, I tried Quake and I got motion sickness from playing it.
Right.
I saw that when I played with him, even in Nordic Division. So I think he had a lot of potential, but he was kind of like a, you know, laid back person. So the personality crashed a lot with Potty and Heat.
Ah, right.
And Drive, and they were very much more like high energy guys, you know.
Yes.
So we played that event, and even if we won that event, the team didn't gel as
right.
individuals. We didn't fit. So, and I was kind of like 2-3 years into my playing with Danish people, Swedish people, etc. So I was happy actually with the decision of just taking with me Dark, and then we made a Norwegian super team actually. So
yes.
It was a fun experience, but yeah, I mean, Dark as a player, he had unlimited potential, but I think there were like his personality kind of stopped his like
right.
He could become a superstar, but he didn't have that motivation.
Put it this way, what you're saying, I met him recently at the SK25 anniversary. He's still the same guy, man. He's still that like super laid back, chill guy, talks really quiet. Like, yeah, exactly. Still the same guy, mate, don't worry. And like you say, just like the joke is with people like that, that's how you also know they're really good. Because since they don't even have to be cocky, you're like, this guy just is really fucking, you can just tell they know they're good, you know, like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And like as a teammate, he was like, it's so easy to be with. You could just tell him what to do, and he did it. And he did it probably much better than you expected, and you
right.
realized that he could do it because he could do anything. Like he could be the anchor, he could be the entry fragger, he was very clutch. He was
yes.
winning a lot of like 1x situations. So he had it all.
That was also a specialty of yours though, right? You were always very good in 1v1 situations as well. And what I want to ask about that is, I actually noticed from watching Counter-Strike, like the people at the tournaments over the years, there's another thing. A lot of people, maybe in an online game, it's not that big a deal. They can win a clutch. Like on LAN at CPLs, dude, people would like, they'd be shitting their pants. Like in this scenario, if you're good, I bet you, it just feels amazing. You can just, you know, they're going to lose and make a mistake, right? In the 1v1.
Yeah, 1v1, 1v2, it doesn't really matter because if you're alone and then you in a random game and you can do whatever you want, you will win it if you're a good player, right? Because you have the fundamentals, you have the aim, you know the game. But when you have that added pressure of LAN environment and you get that, you get nervous, you question every decision you make.
Yes.
Should I peek him now? Should I, or is he diffusing? Is he holding diffuse? These things affects and like those tiny margins become so much more evident in a LAN environment.
Yes.
So yeah, I was pretty clutch back then. And I think I was a very confident player. You know, the confidence level was like, just overconfident, I would say, sometimes. But it helped me a lot in those pressure situations because I was just like, I'm right, he's wrong, I will win this.
I mean, when you say that, though, I actually do think that particular group of people you were around who were just the winners, you, Potty, and these people, one thing I would say is it wasn't just like confidence, like for no good reason. Like back then, I think this is part of what made you guys so successful because the joke was back then, like that one at the CPL Winter, coming third for other people, it's like, wow, third's pretty good. Like for you guys, it was like, well, I didn't win, so fuck it, I better leave the team. Like you had very high expectations for yourself, right?
And that was with a very mediocre team. That was the team with Notorious and those Smurf.
Gauzy, Sol Edge.
Sol Edge, yeah. Little brother of him. Yeah. No, I remember that. I even remember the lower bracket final against X3.
Yeah.
The Americans. And then on train.
Yes.
And I was wrecking people left and right. But, I mean, we didn't get many rounds. I think we lost. It was quite kind of close, but I felt like I won that game. And I got, I remember Keshav coming back up to me after the game saying, yeah, nice AVP or something he said. But, and I was just like, yeah, whatever.
That's pretty good.
My team is so bad and I lost the game. And so I already made up my mind after,
right.
Directly after the game that I couldn't play with these guys anymore. It kind of, that was just my career. I was very ruthless back then.
Yes.
But also, as you said, I created a lot of drama, you know?
Sure.
So it was never like longevity in the way I was thinking.
Yes.
It was just like, if I don't win, I will find somebody I can win with. And so there was like too little trying to make a team that will last, loyalty, and you know, you have your ups and downs, you have to go through them together, blah, blah, blah. For me, it was never like, it was just like, I want to win all the time. And if I don't win, then goodbye.
Another thing about you that people might not know is you were someone who was always a gamer, even at this time. So even when you were playing Counter-Strike, you were playing the other games like Warcraft and Starcraft. And like, this was you were like a Dota. I think you played like early Dota, right? You were playing all these games when they were out, right?
Yeah. I remember one summer I was living in, we were boot camping with Potty and Heaton, and we were basically living in Heaton's mom's apartment and then going to the cafe playing games. They were playing Counter-Strike 24/7, 12 hours a day. I was playing Warcraft 3, 12 hours a day for basically a month, I remember. And just in the evening when we were practicing, I, of course, played some CS. I was actually quite high up in the ladder. I beat the guy who won the ESWC.
Oh, really?
Okay. The event that we were going to as in CS.
Didn't you in Warcraft actually play?
In the ladder, I remember.
Didn't you also at one point actually play something like Clan-Based Nations Cup in Warcraft 3 or something? Didn't you do something like that, like play for Norway or something? I think you did, right?
Yeah, Dota as well.
Ah, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think you actually could have gone pro in these other games if you'd have swapped?
Maybe Dota when it became popular. That was the end of my CS career because I played for a team, Mouse Sports.
Oh, really? Okay.
I went to a lounge. I wasn't like, we weren't that good, but we were good enough to be like top three maybe in that tournament. The thing is, I went to Korea right after that. And in Korea, they didn't have a Dota. I remember.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, they didn't have that game back then. Yes.
So Dota, then Dota 2 came, the standalone game. So the timing was just off. But back then, I was already like 28, 27, 28.
Yes.
So I was quite old and didn't have the motivation to, like, you know, become.
Right.
I wanted to do other things in my life. But
yes.
If Dota had been at the same time as CS, I think I would have, I could have picked that as my.
Ah, right. Okay.
Maybe.
Right, here's a question I have. Since, as you said, you made like the Norwegian super team, which was obviously Eolithic, if people don't know, there's some classic drama involved with this, which is one of the weird things about Executor's career. But I think this is cool, dude. Like, if anyone's to make, like, if someone wanted to make, like, you know, when you make a movie about like sports, but you make it like based on a true story. And the reason they say based on a true story is because it just lets you take like the cool part and make it like more like a movie, you know. The joke is you wouldn't even have to do like the change the storyline part, just the storyline of you and Element and your back. And forth, like the fact that you were like, you were always getting him kicked out of the team, but then when you actually would like partner together, it was like a fucking like almost amazing combo. That like, this was like some like Kobe Shaq stuff, dude. Like, this is actually a fucking cool story. But give me your thoughts on this, because if people don't know, the two of you are obviously, it's obvious why you'd be like rivals in a way. Like, he was sort of following exactly the blueprint you've done, which is you just go from Norway, you go play with the top Swedes, you win with them, but you also, same thing, you hop around when you think it's the right time, you go to this so why did the two of you clash though? Because it seems like personality-wise, you're quite different, right?
I remember I met up with Ula actually in some years ago when we talked to discuss these things, but and he told me things that I didn't know. I wasn't aware about, but I think there was kind of a rivalry between us that I didn't think about back then, but he was very into it. It was just like he was the up-and-coming star, and then I was kind of like, if it was intentional or not, I'm not, I won't say, but it's like, I was just like, if they were taking too much space, I would be like, okay, I don't want to play with this guy. And since I had the stature that I had, I mean, I got him kicked out of
his own team, basically.
Because I was just like, I don't want to play with this
yes.
guy. And so he kind of had this grudge against me. And
sure.
But as you said, when we were playing together, we were amazing. We had a very good chemistry. We had a different understanding of the game that
yes.
suited, like how like I would could prepare the team. We had all the we could tactics, anti tactics against certain teams. But you know, you can have all these tactics, but if suddenly they don't work, you have to think about you got to improvise in the middle of the round,
yes.
Maybe a save or whatever. And then he would always have an idea, and then they worked very well, very well with the pre-plan, because it was very different from the tactics
yes.
that we had like prepared.
Yes.
So we caught teams off guard. So we had a very good understanding of different aspects of the game, I would say. And so yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad to think about it, because I think we had a lot of potential that got wasted there. And
oh, if you could go back in time and just make like a real Norwegian team with backing and just you, like you, Dark Element, or if you all just played together, dude, this could have been like a dynasty, right?
Yeah, no, we had a solid team. I mean, if you, me and Ola, me and Element, and then you had Nikon and
sure.
Dark.
Yes.
And then the fifth was, I think, at first it was Knox.
Knoxville.
I think it was Knoxville, yeah. And you could replace him with anyone, but he was pretty good back then too.
Yeah,
we had a very, good team, but yeah, I guess what was very, I didn't understand back then was that he left when we were at the top. We had just won back to back two major events.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden he didn't want to play with us anymore. And then the whole,
I mean, let's be real. He had his own different version of drama. Like his drama really was more just like, I mean, I think he even admitted this to me years later. He sort of said that he was, I know it sounds mad, but he actually says he did understand the idea. Like, yeah, if I stayed in one team like SK, I'd probably just win forever. But I wanted to see like, you know, now that I won with this team, could I win with like the one I just beat? Which to other people sounds mad executed, but in a way, again, in a movie, that would be like a cool plot, wouldn't it? Like that is a really unique character motivation.
He was a very unique character. Right?
Yes.
Now he told me when we talked about this that he was kind of mad. I got a lot of publicity like in the local media and stuff.
Ah, right.
And then I was just, it was me, you know, it was just like I was the world champion.
Oh, right.
And that was never the intention. It was just that we were never together when the newspaper came to interview. But he felt that it was just the focus was too much on me, not on him. And not on the team. It was just
yes.
like he felt like he deserved the same kind of attention, you know?
Yes.
And this was, you remember I tried to like branding myself.
You did like a website and a membership thing, right? Yeah.
So it was the people behind me that got me all the.
Oh, you had like an agent that was contacting the newspaper. Yeah, that makes sense. Right. Okay.
So I was just like doing things that
right.
I'm supposed to, right?
Yes.
Not like, oh, no, I'm going to take all the
yes.
spotlight and leave it on. Because I knew that. This was back 2005, and already then I was kind of declining skills
yeah, yeah.
compared to everybody else, whatever. So I knew I was very reliant on having good teammates. So that was never the point. But he took it very personally, and
right?
So as a protest, he just left the team. It's funny.
Yeah,
sure. You can make a movie about it. I guess it would be a
yes.
movie.
By the way, another figure in your career that obviously you also spent a number of years with was obviously Veselin. So I want to ask about this guy. Like if there's another person, if people don't know, I always used to say, like you explained about Nip, like Nip was running more simple tactics. Like Veselin was actually someone who early on understood that like this is going to become like a sport. Like we are going to have like a big playbook and you want to know, like you want to study the other guy's demo. He kind of got that side of the game, right?
Yeah, I was very lucky. I mean, I had a very good mentors. Veselin was one of them. He had a very Very. He had a complex way of understanding the game, and he was just like very into the tactical aspect of it, and not just tactical aspect in the game, but he was just the way he was leading the team. He was trying to be more professional
yes.
than most others were back then, and so yeah, and so I picked up a lot of things when I was playing with him, and he's a very cool guy. I also stayed a summer with his team and staying at his place, and so I got to know him as a person. So he became quite a close friend with me after we quit.
All right.
So started with some sort of projects, whatever, in esports. And so I remember we had a lot of discussions, and yeah, he's a cool guy. I really enjoyed being. He was more my type of guy. Yeah.
All right.
Because that was the problem with. The same with Element. I mean, if you stay with SK, he would have won maybe for 3-4 years,
yes.
like every tournament. I could have stayed with NiP as well and be a part of that team. But to be honest, I wasn't like I had to stay with these guys because we weren't like, you know, the person I didn't enjoy being spending 2 months.
It was more just like a group of good players, right? Instead of like best exactly. mates and all that shit, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. By the way, one thing I want to ask about Veselin, because I think this is like a unique aspect to his personality, is back in the day, the other thing was, if someone did have a huge name and profile, like Heaton or Potty, dude, you could also just see at the LAN, like half the teams playing those guys were like, they're going to beat us. Like they just knew in their mind. But one thing I always thought was cool about Veselin was, even though he was wrong, and most of the times they were the better team and beat his team, dude, if people don't know, he wasn't acting. Like he really did believe, like if you put in enough work and you get the right tactic, he believed he could beat these guys. I always thought that was cool because like everyone else, like they would treat them like they were gods. This guy, he actually really believed if he gave the right speech and the right boot camp, we could do it. We could beat him this time and win the championship, right?
He had good self-belief, but to be honest, there was a big difference in skill between Veselin and Potty and Heaton.
Sure.
But they had a rivalry there. But it was funny. It was one event, especially. It was like this French click arena or something. And he came there with his team, and we came with our Norwegian team, and SK was there with Potty and Heaton.
Yes.
And so what happened was that we beat SK, right, very easily because
yes.
I knew their tactics very well, and we... All of our taxes were based on beating SK, basically.
All right, sure.
But then we met Veselin's team, and we lost to them. And then we went back down to the lower bracket, and we beat SK. And then we lost to Veselin's team again in the finals. So, but if the opposite had happened, then we would have won. It was like this triangle where
yes,
SK, Potty and Heaton were better than Veselin's team. But we could beat Potty and Heaton. But
right.
we couldn't beat Veselin.
Yes.
They weren't that good either, but I don't know what happened. It was just finals were playing at 4 at night or something.
It was something crazy like that, yeah.
It was crazy.
Yes.
But it was just funny. But yeah, I mean, I guess he just believed that with hard work and effort that you could like overcome certain limitations on your own. But I'm not saying that Veselin was a bad player, but I'm just saying that he was more of a leader than
yes.
Playing.
No, by the way, just if someone's a casual fan, it's not a diss at all that Executor says he's not as skilled as Heaton and Potty. That's like saying a player, like I'll give you an example. Like if people know in football, like fucking Modric is an amazing player. He won Player of the Year, but he's not fucking Messi. You know what I mean? Like that's not a diss to Modric, though. He'd even tell you he's not Messi, you know? Like,
yeah, it's a good analogy. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's what I mean. But I don't think he thought about it like that.
Right.
But that's what you're saying, right? That he, I think he knew, but that with the right leadership,
he's got a great mentality.
The right tactics,
yeah.
The right mentality, yes. You could still overcome it. I guess. Yeah.
Yes. One thing I want to ask about was this, though. One period I always did think was a bit weird because. Technically, this is your fault, Executor, when I explain the story. If everyone remembers, there was a period when you were with Veselin and you were in the team where it was called Adrenaline and it went to America. And if you remember, the plan Veselin had, which was a cool idea, was since there was going to be that CPL and that like failed CXG LAN thing afterwards, since there's all this money in America, instead of just being in Europe and just fly over, what we're going to do is just live in America. We'll just be there for a few months and we'll make this team. I've got like salaries. It sounded amazing. It was like a true pro expert. But the problem was, just like the rest of this interview, Executor didn't want to go off for like 2 months. So he was like, right, well, I'm not going. But then thing is, because he is still executing, he's amazing at the lands, they were like, but you can come over like 2 weeks before or something. So in theory, they did practice without you for like months and months. And then you came over and look like, it's not like the lineup was bad, but like, there's a bit of a flawed concept, isn't it? They should have had like, you should have just gone over.
No, it was stupid. I mean, in my defense, the thing was that I told them no. I said, like, okay,
right,
you can go to America, but I'm not going. So find a replacement for me.
Yeah.
Good luck, basically. Because I was kind of like done. I had moved to Germany with my
girlfriend. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Living at her house. And we were quite serious. And I was just like, okay, I got to focus on this.
Right.
But, you know... But I mean, I was still playing a lot of other games, and I was just like, whatever. But he was so insistent on having me on his team that he was just like, okay, we'll find a way. And you just do your thing, and then we'll call you over a couple of weeks. So I was not like, okay, if you want me, you have to do it. I told him, get a replacement. And we did. We got a Brunk or something.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So we had like a 6-man rotation of the team.
Yes. But
when I came to the US, I was playing all the maps. So and I hadn't
had okay, so it sure.
Like, kind of like, it was stupid. But yeah, I mean, if I can take it back, I would go with them to the US because we broke up like, I mean, 2 weeks after.
Oh, perfect timing. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I was young and I didn't think about the consequences and whatnot. But yeah, it was a very cool concept. I mean, he was very like forward thinking.
He understood a lot of the business stuff that was going to come, right? Because even with that team later, it became a lot more pro, and you had the real sport. If people don't know, Veselin was so ahead of his time on some esports, so I always give him credit for this. He even was in on that streaming stuff, like, I'm going to say like half a decade before streaming actually became a thing, Executor, like, you know, all the stuff he was doing with the WEG guys and that like cast thing or whatever. Like, the joke is even YouTube didn't exist back then. Like, that was like some Steve Jobs shit, dude. I remember even thinking like, why is he going on about this? That's not going to take off. And then obviously the joke is became like the biggest thing in the world, didn't it?
No, he had a lot of good ideas that you can see now were actually amazing ideas, but he didn't have the backing and he couldn't follow through on it.
Yes,
basically, I guess. But you're right. I mean, the guy, I love the guy. I mean, he was a very good leader as well, and he knew how to be a good leader as well. But yeah, I mean, he was just ahead of his time. I'm thinking also, I was also kind of like, you know, ahead of my time in a lot of aspects. And so, you know, if you could be 18, 20 years now and play, be an esport professional, of course, you would do things a lot differently because the whole scene is different.
Yes.
It's built up differently. You have management, you have professional organization. Back then, it was just like kids playing the game. And then if you were very good, you found other kids that were equally good and you went to a tournament together. It was very randomly set up and just go and compete. Good luck.
By the way, you've got to give me some stories about the times you were in NOA, because this has to be so weird. Like, I've heard some of the stories from Shagwa and people like that about like how ridiculous like the conditions were, where you guys would be in like some ridiculous like apartment in America. And obviously, like, in the theory, you had like the money to attend the events, but at the same time, the manager was a bit dodgy. You know, like, it sounds like this team was here's the thing. It sounds like there was a bunch of really skilled players, but it sounds like if like one event had gone bad, you would have just broken up anyway. It sounds like a really like unstable group, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was. I can, there are a lot, and the way it was actually a very good time for me.
Oh, okay.
Professional in the gaming sense, because I felt like we had a very good team, and in game we understood each other after some practice. But yeah, that was never the problem. The problem was that we had two players, one from Canada, one from LA, three from Norway, right?
Yes. And
we had to be at these LANs to even be able to practice. We could never practice online. That was one thing. Another was that when with the whole NOA concept was that there was this one guy, Gary something.
Yeah, Sanchez, Siege. His name was Siege.
He was the manager, and he was doing all the things. And I still don't know what he actually did. But he was with the team when I was there. Because I joined the team like a year after he was actually made. Because they did very poorly in the summer ESWCL.
Yeah. Yes. And then,
And so they had PSL, and so I actually don't know how that team, like the organization, how it was built, and how the financials were around that. But when I joined them, it was a very good team with good players. As I said, we boot camped. We lost like to local American teams, etc. But then we kind of just found our rhythm during the lower brackets in the CPL, and we won that event. But that was just me coming to the States, and then we were playing and sitting in a net cafe. We had no idea about the money situation or what the money even had.
Yes.
So you know that if you don't know, I mean, I can mention this. It's like we won two back-to-back CPLs and the WEG. None of that money was received by me or Nikon, or I'm not sure if Knoxville, not Knoxville, he wasn't in the team, but I don't know if Shago got all his money either. But some of the players, I think, got some of the money, and I think most of the money went to Gary or somebody that that got sent them the money, right? So those, and that shit happened all the time.
Yes.
That was just not a...
There was a lot of sketchy people back then. Everyone in business back then was a bit dodgy, because obviously it wasn't like a real thing, was it? It was sort of like we were pretending it being a sport back then.
So that kind of like killed my motivation.
Right.
Because there was no guarantees. Even if you were at the top of something and you were sponsored or whatever, you never know what would happen like the day after the tournament.
By the way, when you won that CPL with NOA, it must also have been like a good moment in the sense that it, like, you were back at the top again. You like won the big championship again, like after a few years where you'd had like the seconds and thirds. And for someone like you, like we said earlier in the interview, it's a big deal to win. Like, it's not good to, you don't want to be known as just a good player. You want to win the tournament, right?
Yeah, that was at the top of my, that was my second win.
Yes, kinda. Yes, exactly.
It was just like, I had the whole year with adrenaline and in its ups and downs, and it wasn't going so well. And then coming to NOA, winning, and suddenly starting winning again. So I was very motivated for WEG season two, I remember. But that's then what happened then? Element left.
Classic.
Element left, we got quick.
Yeah, I actually did an interview with him recently. He even told me that, funny enough, he even said back then, like, obviously I wasn't playing much, but they just called me up last minute. I wanted to ask you about him because he was obviously a teammate of yours in Adrenaline. And to me, like, he was one of those players where, like, maybe his name wasn't that, like, maybe a lot of fans wouldn't remember his name. Now, I always thought he was a very good player, mate, a very good LAN hopper.
He was very underrated. I was underrating him.
All right.
When I was playing against him. But when I played with him, he was like by far the most skilled player, like with the in the team that I was playing with. I mean, it was him, Vaslan,
Lucchese,
and
Luciano.
Luciano, yeah. And he was very good. It was that's why our first option was Fisker, but then he backed out in the last second, and then he was the second one. He was like immediately we pick him up. I didn't know that he hadn't played that much then, but
right,
yeah. So he was a cool guy, and very like I knew that I could live with him for a month and not go crazy. So that was a big factor. Right.
Oh yeah, that was obviously the thing people forget as well is for the WEG thing, you had to stay there, as you say, for like a whole month together in like a little chalet area. So that was another thing people didn't realize, because back in the day, maybe you boot camp a week before LAN. So the difference is if there's a teammate that you actually don't like, you only have to see him for 2 weeks basically. But in this scenario, like the joke about the WEG tournament rescue is like there's a bunch of teams broke up because of that tournament it's like being in prison if you were the teammate you hate for a month, you know. So I know the American teams were always having problems, you know.
It was funny. season one, we ended up in like this, it wasn't even in Seoul. It wasn't like this remote, like, camp.
Yes.
With like, I don't even remember if we had good internet there, but at least we were far, far away from anything else. And then we were like living in these huts. And we had some PCs and we could play some games, and we got like a canteen food every day.
So it was like being in school or something.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Right.
But luckily, when they made it a lot better, like
yes,
they took our feedback and they tried to make the camp better. Then they relocated us into hotels in Seoul. And then in Veg Season 2, we basically lived in Seoul at the hotel.
Yes.
And had own practice rooms. So then it was just like, that was awesome. But I mean, the first season was quite... Yeah, quite an experience. It was, I gotta say.
By the way, since you were the in-game leader of that famous NOA team, one question I have to ask you, as someone who knows all the players involved, is when I think of your career and I think about how like you like tactics, and you like to know how the team's gonna operate and people do the right things, dude, it must have been really unusual when you were trying to use Shagmar and Method, because these are two players where they're players where they do whatever the fuck they want. Like on Shagmar's case, he really is just a guy who goes whatever fucking AWP he wants, and then people might know on the Method angle. Dude, I heard a story that in this team, you like banned him from using HE grenades or something, because even though you had like insane aim, you would just do weird stuff like just throw the grenade in the wrong place or something. So give me your thoughts. It sounds like you were trying, this sounds like trying to herd cats, mate. It sounds impossible, these guys. Like, what was it like working with these? Because they're obviously mega skilled, but they sound like very unusual people to work with.
Yeah, they weren't Norwegians, let's say it like that. We were three Norwegians, right? And Element and Nikon, they knew me. Then we knew each other. We knew the play style we wanted to play. We had a certain understanding of Counter-Strike. Even if we had different opinions, we knew how to play the game in a certain way. And then we have Shagwa, which I have to say, he was a very good opper, but I would say that he is also very intelligent.
Right.
In game, out the game, he's a very like intelligent guy.
Makes sense, because people don't know, he actually became a big poker player years later. He's like really famous.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I thought all of us a very intelligent player, but as you said, they had this randomness of their play.
Yes. Right?
Whatever that they thought was good at that moment, they would do, no matter what, like the team strategy or tactics were in that round. But what I did was like, yeah, I did say to Matthew that he couldn't use grenade, but it was kind of like a joke, but it was
right.
Like, I didn't want him to pick up a nade in certain moments when I knew that if the enemy came, he would shoot the enemy.
Right.
It was just like, he could suddenly make a decision that was, wasn't good.
By the way, was he like super unusually skilled? Everyone told me his aim was like impossibly good.
Yeah, you know what? Even if I played with him a lot, I was never like, I never had like an opinion of him, to be honest.
Okay.
Because when I joined the team, I just knew that there were four very talented individuals, right? And I know Ola was a very good close friend with him, and he was a very cool guy to be around.
Sure, yeah.
So, which that was enough for me. And then I got told he was a very good aimer. He plays on these sites, on Inferno, whatever, on the different maps, and I just put him there. And then when I made the T strategy, it was always like this. My goal was to put Shagwar, the opper, in the position I wanted an op in, both CT and T. Mikey did his thing. Element was always the lurker. And then Nikon was like me. We were throwing all the nades and
right,
making this like the whole strategy
yes.
work. And so I've never like paid so much attention to Method's aiming. I just was told, and I know that it was very good.
Right.
I mean, he fried a lot of people. So
for
it
sure.
had to be good. But it was like I was watching him play Counter, and I was like, wow, he is amazing. And because I was playing with four amazing players.
Sure.
It wasn't like he was standout aim compared to the four others.
By the way, let me ask about Nikon a bit then, because he's always another name that's super forgotten. All I'll say is this. Every person who was a teammate of his, he is one of their favorite teammates. It sounds to me like this is the guy, like if you go to war, you want this guy by your side, right?
He's a guy that actually plays some Counter-Strike with me in these days.
Okay.
Yeah, so I love him. I mean, he's the guy that was like, you know, Dark, like how I described Dark.
Yes.
He's like the ultimate team player. You have him in his team. He makes no fuss. He's also like, he wants to be a part of the team. He can have good, like he can give you good input, but end of the day, he will always do what you tell him to do because it's the best for the team. So he always puts the team in front of himself, which was rare back then. It was like a lot of, yeah, even I'm also part of that group. But I mean, you put your own interest ahead of the group's interest. And then you needed those type of players in the team to keep it all together. So he was amazing as well. I mean, he had very good aim. He had a very good understanding on the game. He was good in the clutch situations. He was often, you know, one of the key aspects of being the defending, of playing CT side is that you need to maybe in certain positions kill more than one guy.
Yes.
To actually hold the side.
I mean, the classic example is if you play the floor of upper sight on nuke as the CT and they run out the heart of the door, you have to be able the guy who can get like three kills, which is like, I think he was his spot, right?
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, there are certain positions, certain maps that you need to do multiple kills, and he was often that guy.
Yes.
So he was very reliable as that kind of like holding certain position very effectively.
Yes.
Yeah. So I mean, Nikon, Dark, Element, Knoxville, the Norwegian guys I play with. I mean, there were a lot of those guys that I will still call friends today, and I could hang out with, you know. Which was sad because, I mean, we had this Norwegian team, but then, it was just the timing was off and, that's just life, I guess.
Another period I wanted to ask you about was later you had a version of NOA where you picked up those young Swedish players and you tried to go to another WEG and a few more tournaments. And this was the era where like these aren't as famous players. These are more like up and coming players. What was this era like? Because this was like you were trying to like do a totally different approach. Did you just not have the offers yourself to be in other teams? Did you want to do a project like that? What was the thinking?
No, actually, that's kind of complicated. But after WEG season two, my friends, my childhood friends, actually got involved in the gaming.
Okay.
And became the management for NOA.
Ah, right.
Which was a good thing, because they were trying really hard to like, you know, make esports big. That's the thing about all the articles and making my own website and all that.
Right.
I wanted like, you know, brand the game, they call themselves, and brand my name and the team's name, of course. But what happened was that already back then, I was kind of like on the fence about should I keep on playing? Because I felt like I had kind of hit my own limit as a player, as my skills in the game. Yes, I could be the in-game leader, but was that really the only thing I wanted to do, you know, in the game? I wanted to be the one fragging. And I had all these uncertainties. So if they hadn't gotten into that, the choice was either for me to start a team. I got, for instance, an offer of starting the new Fnatic team before, the very successful.
Yes.
They asked me to make that team.
Ah, right.
But then I was very, like, you know, committed to NOA because they were my friends. They were my childhood
Makes
friends.
Makes sense, yes.
My life. So, but then I had some struggles finding the right players. I didn't have, I burned too many bridges, I guess. And I didn't get all the players that I wanted. And then my motivation kind of went like, okay, I don't see the potential, but okay, I have to do this because now my friends are so committed in this project.
Yes.
Right? So it kind of became a half-assed project. It's kind of sad. But I was kind of done already, like middle of 2005.
One thing I wanted... Yeah, it wasn't that long after you retired, like maybe a year later, I think. I actually have a question to ask you because this is a story I know about, but maybe a lot of old school fans don't because it's actually from years later. So this is when you were at these WEG tournaments that were in Korea, this is what the story relates to this. Because when you came years later, I remember you came, I'm going to think it was like 2010 or something. You came to Korea to be the commentator for one of the, you know, World Esports Game tournaments or whatever. And if people don't know this story, right? Obviously, Executor is not like his heritage doesn't go, like, look at him, he doesn't go 1,000 years back in Norway. Like, he's Asian in some sense, isn't he? So what people don't know at the time was you were actually adopted when you were young and came to Norway. And basically, when you went to this a tournament in Korea, wasn't it something like, you could tell the story, but wasn't it something like they did like a newspaper article in Korea about like that you were one of the people coming as well as like the tournaments? And wasn't it something mad, like your actual birth mother like saw the article and you met up again for something crazy like that, right?
Yeah, you can write a book about that story.
That's a pretty crazy story itself, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, it was very... I'm not actually exactly sure how that went down, but it was just like... yeah, I was going to Korea. I knew the bag people from when I was competing, right? And then they wanted me to be like... There was going to be like this all-star game between Europe and Asia or some... yeah, and I was going to be the captain, and then they made this story. It was in the papers, and then suddenly they called me up and said that there's this family guy who is convinced that I was their long lost son that got adopted, right? So it was not my mother that saw that article.
Ah, right.
Cousin, I think.
And was it the case that, like, when you'd been sent off, like, they'd lost touch with you, you didn't have contact with them or anything?
No, no, I got adopted.
No, but I mean that you weren't able to like contact them later, or that you didn't know who they were or whatever until this story.
Yeah. No, I didn't even know. I didn't have a Korean family. I was adopted to Norway.
Right.
They gave me away kind of when I was like 5 years old, I guess.
Okay.
So they didn't have any relation.
Yes.
And so what happened was that. It's kind of hard to talk about it too because I'm not. Quite 100% sure about all the things I'm saying.
All right, fair enough.
It's more like I've been told this.
Yes.
Well, basically what happened was that my mother were not aware of them adopting me away because it wasn't her choice.
Ah, right.
Living with her. I was living with her sister.
Right.
And so I never asked them about it. But, I mean, I guess, ended it. On a good note,
since
I got to know them again, and I've seen them, and they've been coming to Norway to visit me. So it's
that's cool.
I say like I have like two families. Yeah, it's quite random. And it was very funny because when I landed in Korea, there was like this documentary they made.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So then I got to meet my mom and my uncles and my mom's siblings, and then their kids, and she had a new kid. So I have a half sister.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
One thing I wondered about. Yeah, go on.
It's just too long to be.
Ah, right.
Too complicated.
Sure.
Yeah.
One thing I wondered about in that case, though, because I actually didn't know specifically Korea you came from until this story, is like the joke with Koreans, because they're so successful in esports, is people always put it just down to culture. They always go, look, it's not like they're just like born better at games. But the joke is like, you actually make me wonder if Koreans are just born better at games. Like, you're pretty fucking good, dude.
Yeah. Maybe, I guess. I mean, I guess it is a cultural thing, because, I mean, in Korea, gaming and in those PC banks and whatever they call them.
It's still huge. Quite, now.
Quite accepted as like a part-time thing to do.
When you went there, did you actually feel any like strange thing of like, in a way, these are like my people? So, do you have any connection? Did you feel any vibe when you went there?
Yeah, I guess when I was staying there, I lived there for some years after my game.
Oh, you did? Yes. Just for fun, right? You were just having a cool time out there, I remember, yeah.
Being with my like new family. And it was fun. I mean, they feel when I was there, I felt like, okay, it's weird to see millions of people looking like me because I grew up.
Oh, sure, yes, exactly. Yeah.
But if you think about the gaming side of it, I'm not sure how you can put it, but I mean, isn't there a saying like, if you think you're good at something, there's always this 5-year-old Chinese kid that is.
All right, I see. Yeah, makes sense. There's so many. Yeah, of course.
You have if you have a lot of people dedicated and doing something, they will become good at it.
Yes.
And Korea gaming is such a big thing. I mean,
a unique thing people might not know from the West is the other thing about Korea is it's obviously not a country that has like hundreds of millions of people, but the key thing is when Koreans get into something, they all do it as a society. So like the joke is, if the game's like StarCraft, like everyone's just playing it. It's like every kid plays that one game.
Exactly. And they like grind it.
Yes, they go hardcore. Yes, exactly.
They go hardcore, yeah. And then you become good at it.
So yeah,
I don't think it's in the genes. I think it's just a matter of dedication and practice. So I guess the mentality is different in Asian cultures, I guess, that like makes gamers, that fits gamers more than. Because you got to have like this single minded focus on playing certain things and doing very repetitive actions.
I've got a question for you. In your career, you could pick up what time, maybe at your peak or something, right? if we had to describe Executor's game, like, do you think of yourself, like, were you one of the more skilled players? Was your aim good? What was your strength in the game?
Strength in the game. Well, in the early days, I was just a very good player. Fragger. I could use the AWP very good.
Seems like you just used it randomly, though. Like, you weren't like using it all the time, like some players, but you were good with it, though. So, like, how did, was it just something you did by feel? When did you use it?
No, yeah, that's funny because, yeah, I never saw myself as an AWPer, but I guess if I made a tactic that required to have an AWP, I just did it myself.
Right.
Because even in NIP, you told me he was a very good offer, but he wasn't playing for that. He wasn't playing in different iterations, I guess. And we didn't have an offer back then. So then I became the offer in NIP, basically, because we didn't have an offer. But it wasn't like because I was just like put into the team because you're good with the op. I was playing in NIP first because of my general skill sets.
Sure.
And then I was the in-game leader. And then when we needed an opper, I took up the op. But like at my peak, I would say I was just, I played with a very high sensitivity. So I was just like, I could do a lot of crazy things in a round, but I was never the most consistent. I would say I was just like, you know, it could be very, it could be like extremely good. And then, and I was very good in pressure situations, like at long, like finals, semifinals, I would always perform pretty good. Yeah. But that was just back in the day when I think the skill gap also was quite big, to be honest. But when everybody else got good, I was more like, a team player and the in-game leader, and there were a lot of players that were better than me before I quit. I can say that for sure.
Was there any player over the years where either like they could have joined your team or you wanted them to and it just didn't happen? Was there like a player you wanted to play with
that I couldn't join? You told me you mentioned it after VEG, and I was making the new NOA team. I wanted DSN and those big Greek guys, Forrest and not Karn, but there were some guys that
Okay.
And I wanted them in my new team.
Oh, that would have been interesting because they were really skilled players. Yeah,
they were way ahead of their time. I mean, seeing Forrest holding side hall on Inferno, we met them on Inferno. I can still remember; it was just impossible. He killed two or three people, no matter how we approached that. He was just insanely good. The Neo also I played.
The Polish player? There's a possibility you could play with him. Okay.
I couldn't play with him, but
just saw that he was good, right?
I saw he was just like crazy good. And this was early days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I wanted to play, if I were to make a new Fnatic team, it would have been with those guys. And I kind of regret that. That would have been a cool project. But I mean, they did quite well.
Yes, certainly. Yes.
They had Karn, I guess. Because that was the thing. Like I said jokingly that I burned too many bridges. But I didn't do the networking with the new generation.
Right.
They didn't know me because I was never like interacting with people in that way. So I didn't have the connections to make this new team, even though I knew what kind of players I wanted. It was just like I had no relation with them. So that was also the moment I figured out that now my time is over, because I didn't have it with the I knew what kind of players would become the best for the next years.
One thing I would like to ask you is this. In the early days, we've talked about some of the elements when we were talking about the first CPL, like the fact that like it's so amateur compared to like the professional scene now, like the money, the teams, you didn't have salary. But it's even worse if people don't know. Like also like in the beginning of CS, there wasn't even a way to spectate. Then HLTV was kind of a bit boggy. And then like the live crowds would just be a few people from the tournament. Like the game was so different by then. What I wanted to ask you was this. Is it wild to you now, every now and then, if you look in on esports and you see how huge it is, or even if you see the mad shit, like in everyone who makes like a Hall of Fame, like fucking Heaton is the first person to go in. And the joke is, dude, like, even though to me and you, he was just some 16-year-old Swedish kid back in the day. Now they treat like he is treated like he's Pele or something, you know, like, welcome. Like, it's actually crazy to see how sort of like how things have changed, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, he earned that.
Yeah.
He made a name that, I mean, he made a brand and he worked for it. So, I mean, he was very dedicated on becoming that kind of iconic figure.
Yes.
So it's not mad. It's just hard work and that he has been working with it for years. And I mean, the esports scene in Sweden has always been like a much bigger potential than in Norway. I don't think Element or me or anybody else that even if we wanted to do it in that way would have that same amount of success that he has had and yes. Like the iconic figure that he is in Swedish esports. It was just not. It's Norway has never been that kind of arena to have that kind of a personality. But I mean he earns it. He earned it by being very dedicated. I mean, he did a lot of things after he quit.
Yes. Since you said earlier that you actually play with some of the old Norwegian guys now sometimes, what do you think of CSGO?
I love it. I love CSGO. No, I don't. I think it's fun to play. I mean, these days, if I want to do something to relax after work, I try to play some CS with the Nikon and BSL. He still works in CS, I guess.
All right.
Yeah, I play a lot with those guys and some other friends of them, and so we are a good group of guys, and it's social. And the game itself is kind of like it's CS, you know. I still have the aim, but I don't have the time or energy or motivation to learn all the nades,
right?
Which I figure out is very important in this game because it is much more effective.
The utility is way more powerful, isn't it, than 1.6? Think about how, the smoke grenade was a joke in 1.6, wasn't it?
Yep.
It's amazing in CSGO. It's almost too powerful.
It's like a wall.
Exactly.
It's not like a wall for the opponent, it's a wall for you, but they can apparently see through it somehow.
Sometimes there's little edges,
All those nuances.
It's
difficult for an old man like me.
You're not nerding out like all the kids, exactly.
No. I'm not like going into YouTube and watching 10 minutes and then going to a server and practice. Doing 20 minutes.
What about other games? Like, do you ever play like League of Legends or Dota 2 or anything like that?
I play Dota. I play quite a lot, actually.
What role do you play in Dota?
Mid or carry.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, depends.
Are you good in the modern day? Are you actually good at Dota 2?
Nah. I would say if I played a lot, I would be probably low divine rank. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Which is top 10%, I guess, top 5%, but not like anything special.
Have you over the last, like, we're talking now, like, last 5-10 years, have you ever tried to get involved in any other esports projects? Have you ever thought about coming and doing something?
I've been had some, like, you know, half serious requests about stuff, but I took my master's in industrial economics and I'm doing quite good with that. So I'm happy with that, with my life choices after Korea.
Are you someone in your real life job? Are you able to be really diligent? Do you apply yourself a lot?
You know what? The gaming experience and my life experiences through gaming and after that has helped me a lot. And it's just like you got to work, and if you are a project leader or if you're working with other people, you know. As the whole this interview has been, it's like I have done a lot of things that I can say if I don't regret this, like maybe not the right word, but you know, you learn from your mistakes.
Yes.
I've done my fair share of mistakes throughout my gaming career and in life in general. But the most important thing is that you learn from it, right? So that's what I'm trying to bring to the table. And I mean, even in work, when I did the interviews for the work that I'm doing now, I always mention it because it's a big part of my life. I mean, if you have a CV and then there's a hole in 10 years plus, what did you do?
Yes, exactly.
You have to kind of like try to explain it. But I try to explain it in terms that a normal people will understand.
I mean, you can do that, yeah. If people don't know, like all you do is you say, you know, I was part of like an early like sports endeavor with media. Yeah, that you can make it sound cool, right? If you do it the right way, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There you go.
Yeah. Right, at the end of this interview, do you have like a final message for people, or do you want to thank anyone or say hello to someone?
That actually watched this interview that I know. I don't think so, but I mean, I would just say I would be kind to, I mean, esports in general. I think it's awesome to see how big esports become. I think we all knew that it would become this big. Sad to say that it was 20 years too late.
True, yes.
But I think esports has given me a lot of experiences, unique experiences, and I will always be grateful for that. And if you see me on ESPOtalen, then say hello and I'll...
All right, you play there. You play the Gathers, right, I see.
Yeah, I play. That's the platform. That
yeah,
I
yeah. yeah. Okay, Mangatak.
Yes. Same to you, my friend. And then I'll see you when I see you.
Now, I'm a baller, a visionary, and a hard worker. So you can imagine I'll always get by in esports. But at the same time, I very much appreciate the people who support me, such as Matt Pugnacio Rakula, Ahmed Haju, Tosh, ButPounder420, Animosity, Token, Tobias Bernasconi, Kovacevic, Jensen Gore, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest that will appear on my content? Do you want to ask a question in my monthly AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the upcoming guests are for some reflections or interview content. Or do you want to be one of those nerds asking me questions, talking about the old days and new things and one of those long, lengthy, topical discussions that I do? Well, if any of those tickle your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? Via the Patreon link in the description box.